tall hitters that are entering their 32, 33 range
Richie
scare the crap out of me. Good evening, and welcome to episode 53 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Gianella and Mauricio Rubio. How are you guys doing on not a Monday evening, on a Wednesday evening?
Well, Chris Sale's struggling, and it's just not good for me right now. Just not good.
I'm going to be out like to see Mao and a bunch of the Chicago BP people in like 2 days. So as we're talking about this, so I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, that's a lot of people are going to be congregating for the Brewers event.
Yeah, apparently I should not rub this into Brett because he's all sad. I should tell by his voice.
Chicago's a great city. I mean, it's worthy to be sad about.
You know, I've never been.
You, Brett, have you been to Chicago?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not in a long time, but I have, yeah.
I've barely been to the Midwest. I used to work for a St. Louis company. I've been there a few times, but really otherwise, very rarely I get out there.
Just before you come and hang out with me, make sure you tell your wife that you love her very much.
I don't know, man. You and I might wind up snuggling.
No, it's not going to be you and me snuggling at all.
Well, all right then. You guys can discuss who you're gonna snuggle with later. We'll move on a little bit here. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Dynasty Guru. Mao is at MRubio52, and Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's Gianella. You can reach us as a podcast, Flags Fly Forever, baseballprospectus.com, and rate and review us and stuff. So. We're going to start again with Expert Fab, even though we're recording this 2 days later than usual. So we have a little bit extra time to think about this. So I'm going to throw it out to Mike. What did we do, Mike? What did we do this week?
Well, you know, one of the costs of success and, you know, early success in labor, I don't want to jinx us because I think last year at this point we were doing pretty well. And then Jose Fernandez got hurt and we started, you know, flinging poo. We're not really doing very much. This week, Ryan Hannigan got hurt. So we kind of decided, you know, we looked at the catchers out there. There wasn't really much to have. We put a dollar in on Andrew Susak, who isn't starting. But I think the thinking is, you know, in a 15-team, two-catcher league, it kind of makes more sense to go with somebody who might produce 2 or 3 days a week as opposed to a starter. I think Brian Peña was a guy that we kind of just rejected. But the big, you know, this kind of is a good segue. The big bid this week in Labor Mix was Blake Swihart. And he went for, I think it was $37. Is that correct?
It was $37.
And he went to Ray Murphy of Baseball HQ. And I actually, you know, in the article that was, you know, was already up on BP and was out Tuesday, you know, I emailed him because, you know, when you write something negative or questioning of another expert, I like to get their feedback, you know, because you don't want to throw other experts under the bus. I've had it done to me before. It's not pretty. So, you know, his thinking, and it kind of made sense, is, you know, he's in a bad position kind of all across the board. He's toward the bottom of the standings. And he's kind of taking a gamble that Swihart's performance in the minors, albeit in a small sample, will kind of work out for him. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm not necessarily enthused by the play, but, you know, Brett, we were in that position last year where we had to take some chances, and we took them. And, you know, I think we talked about this last year when, you kind of like are making the big bet and throwing the Hail Mary, you usually have a lot of incomplete passes, to mix the sports metaphors, and I think that's probably what's going to happen to Ray. But I can kind of see why he's doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why he's doing it too. I mean, I wouldn't put that much into Swihart, just because, well, I love Swihart long term. I'm not that bullish on him for 2015. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough spot to be in, and we've been there. So
it was real cute that you guys put a $1 bid on him.
Yeah,
he was a backup bid too, I think.
Yeah,
right?
He was our third. We had him behind Susek and behind Pena, I think.
We did.
No, that was
honestly, that's where I see Swihart's value this year. I think if he sticks the whole year, I think he's going to be pretty close to replacement level in this format. He's going to hit at the bottom of the lineup. I don't think he's not going to hit, you know, home runs. He's not going to steal bases, and he's not going to score many runs or drive in many at the bottom of that lineup, even with a good lineup around him.
I just want to ask a question, like, really quickly. So, you know, last week, I think it was last week, and, you know, it was last week in 2 days, so it feels like, light years ago. Addison Russell, you know, we were talking about him, and we were kind of talking about his impact. I guess, and I want to ask both you guys, like, let's compare that. Let's compare Russell and Swihart and the impact they can have in a deep mixed league. Not so much who you'd rather have, but what's the difference in their impact?
I think that for me, I just think it's tough to ask a catching prospect to come up and have immediate impact in a fantasy format, because they have a lot of different responsibilities that they're learning at the major league level. They have to learn their pitching staff. They have to figure out a lot of things defensively. They have just a lot of things coming at them all at once. And while they're doing all the things that they have to do on the defensive end, they also have to catch up to major league pitching. So, you know, it's just tough to try to measure a regular position player against a catcher, because, you know, while catcher is on the defensive spectrum, I do believe that it kind of exists in its own planet. Like, they're probably like the other position when it comes to offensive players. So, you know, just asking a guy like Swihart to produce immediately and have immediate impact is just, it's unfair, because it's, you know, it's a real tough situation that you have when you're coming up immediately like that.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's really rare that you get a catcher that comes up and produces offensively anywhere close to right away. This is why catchers take a long time to develop a lot. And the thing about Swihart also is that he hasn't had he hasn't moved terribly slowly through the upper minors. He moved slowly through the lower minors, and I probably should have brought it up before I even started talking about him. But he does not have that much experience at Triple A. And I'm going to bring it up now, so I'm not just completely talking out of my ass. Yeah, he's 36 games total at Triple A level and 92 at the Double A level. So you're talking about less than a full minor league season of upper minors experience, and that's a really tough aspect of the job for a catcher. And add to that, you know, Swihart has a good offensive ceiling for a catcher, but he doesn't have an astounding offensive ceiling overall. Russell doesn't have a ton of experience over high A either, but he can hit, and he's also getting used to a new position, but he's shown the ability to hit for power at the major league level, and that is what makes him more exciting now, and honestly more exciting than I thought he would be when he first got called up. His strikeout to walk rate is a little scary, but it's gotten better. It's gotten better over the past week. He's made improvements. He's gotten seven extra base hits in 12 games, and he's slugging .500. That's really, really good. He's 21 years old.
He's gone out a couple of times too. It's pretty nice.
He's got juice in the bat.
Yeah, I have him in Tout Wars, and you know he was a reserve pick, and I think we talked about him after Tout Wars, and you know I was hoping he'd be up in like June or July, and yeah, he's really, you know, he's raw, and you kind of see some of the mistakes he's making, but you can see the special, like you can see where he's going to be really, really great in a couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's really it on Swihart, and I agree with you guys. And, you know, I think it's kind of almost analogous to pitchers with catchers, where it's the one position on the diamond where you can kind of count on one hand the guy who comes up right away and is a completely, you know, successful player. You know, we don't want to rush through this, but there wasn't really a lot else going on in labor. The other guy that we got was AJ Ramos on the Marlins. We bid two, and Brett, you were right. We could have bid one, but, you know, c'est la vie. Yeah, I know. But we're kind of trolling for saves, and I'm still not particularly impressed with Steve Cishek, although he's kind of righted the ship a little bit this week. His velocity's still a little bit down. So those were kind of our moves. I don't know if there's anything else here that you see that you know, want to comment on. You know, there were a few moves. I think we're getting to that point of year, like Zach Cozart was picked up. People are kind of starting to make those plays for players where there was some cynicism, and now they're like, you know, I don't think anyone thinks he's going to hit 25 home runs, but it's kind of like, yeah, you know, Zach Cozart's not the totally crappy player he was last year. He'll kind of be the guy he was in 2013, 2012. You know, he'll be enough in a deep mix. Is there anyone on this list, Brett or Mauricio, that you want to talk about specifically on the mix list?
I got two guys I just want to touch on really quickly, both Braves. First one is Kelly Johnson. He is just all kinds of hot right now. I actually like this bit a lot. I think it was picked up by B Sports.
Who's now ahead of us and overall.
Yeah, don't remind me. But it's one of those plays where, you know, he went for $6, and that's just about the right bid to bet on, you know, a hot hand guy like Kelly Johnson. I don't think he's gonna keep this up the whole year, but you know, you can't let a guy like that sit on the waiver wire for that long, and you know this happened to be the week for it.
Well, and you know it's kind of it's the timing thing. We have a team in labor where, you know, except for that second catcher, like I don't think we really have a hole on offense, do we, Brett?
No, our we don't have anyone who's being dominant on offense, but we have a very spread roster.
We have Anthony Goes on our bench, who could probably start in this format for a lot of teams. You know, and we talked about earlier, you know, we're joking, you know, Aaron Hill has done nothing, but, you know, he's playing both sides of the doubleheader today. He's doing well. He could wind up back in the lineup. You know, we're in that position where we could probably trade one of these guys for, you know, either a pitcher or, you know, hopefully trade one of the bigger guys for a closer, which is our main need right now, and try to do that. But getting back to Johnson, that's kind of one of those problems. Like, yeah, that's a good bid. We just have nowhere to put him. Like, he wouldn't be better than anyone on our team. You know, I think I wrote this in the Fat Report. You know, he's not going to hit 32 home runs, which is what he was on pace to do. But the funny thing about him is, you know, if he winds up with, say, 17 or 18 home runs, would anyone be surprised by that at this point? I don't think I would.
No.
Yeah. He's kind of a Jekyll and Hyde player. And, you know, this year, he's a Jekyll.
Yeah.
Or a Hyde, I guess, depending on how you this crappy analogy goes. Yeah. So who is the second Brave you wanted to talk about, Brett?
It's Mike Foltynewicz. He's up, and he actually had a pretty decent start against the Phillies today. He looks like the kind of guy who you can try to get strikeouts from off the wire if you really don't care about your ratios. But, you know, obviously that's not the kind of that's not the kind of player that we that we're targeting at this point. But he's definitely someone who has strikeout potential off the waiver wire. You don't see that many guys with, you know, strikeout per inning potential, even if it comes with a lot of risk. So he's an interesting pickup also by B-Sports. They're picking up everybody.
Yeah, I think I was less enthused by him in the write-up than you are, just because some of the risk that's tied to him. But, yeah, again, if you have a solid staff in a mix or a particularly deep mix format, I agree. It's kind of fine to, you know, hold on to him in the back end and, you know, see how that works out. Mal, is there anyone here that you wanted to talk about, or is that sufficient?
It's pretty sufficient. I just want to point out that this is a very, very impressive unawarded bids list that's going on down here. You have Adam Warren, who went unawarded. Kelvin Herrera, also unawarded. And guys like Kevin Gausman and Kyle Blanks. This is long, and this is pretty impressive. You guys put in bids on three guys and decided, nah. Nah.
That's how we experts roll. We're cool people. By the way, I want to get a thing going where Adam Warren is just nicknamed the Commission.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. He's throwing that magic bullet. Screw you guys with the funny hat on. So to segue to the National League, I was very conservative. I bid two, and I had the lowest bid on Carlos Frias of the Dodgers, who went for 12 to Scott Wildman of On Roto. I wound up as a backup with your guy, Brett, you know, with Martin on the Braves for a buck, who I know you like that because I know you like the high strikeout middle relief and NL only, no?
I do.
Yeah. And I made that point in the write-up. It's kind of like, well, you know, I kind of get, you know, getting a starter, getting six or seven good innings, but middle relievers who can strike guys out can really churn out, like, say, 10, 11, 12 bucks of value in an only. You know, a starter has a couple bad outings, and he's just not going to get there. And, you know, I thought it was kind of funny slash unfortunate that Scott Baker went for 12 and was DFA'd or cut right after that happened. That's rough.
Yeah, I think it was within the matter of like an hour or two.
Yeah. we had a text conversation about the free agent pitchers, and you were like, Baker should be owned, and I stayed away from that. I was like,
I still think he should be owned, but 12 was a little rich. But.
Well, he was at 16, 11, 8, and 0 were the bids.
Yeah.
So apparently you weren't alone, but. Well, you know, the funny thing about Tout is that there's some teams that early on like have a lot of pitching holes, and you know, I lost Ryu, and I've still got five starters, and I've got Kershaw, and you know, it's been like mediocre to slightly above average Kershaw. So the fact that I'm still, I think, like 10 points or whatever it is out of first place, I'm kind of like, yeah, like at some point Kershaw is going to just turn on the juice and be Kershaw, and I should be good. And if he isn't, you kind of throw up your hands and you're like, well, it's just not my year if Kershaw's going to put up a 3-5. That's pretty much the way that goes.
3-5 is below average now.
I know. Well, I was trying to be generous.
No, you're right. It's just, it's, you know, if you're at the point where your top pitcher, one of your top performers is just going to go out there and be flat, like it's... There's just not much you can do.
Well, you know, Travis Wood before that Cardinals game was my ace in terms of the performance. And, you know, Tim Lincecum in terms of his performance has been good. It goes back to this whole weird thing is that it's still kind of early. Like, it's not early, but it's still kind of early. There's still some stuff going on that falls into the outlier territory. And I suspect from watching Kershaw that he's going to be fine. He's going to put up, you know, a 2-3 maybe, you know, a 2-4 if he doesn't put up like a sub-2. He's just going to be that ace. And I think people, and I see this in like standard mix, you know, I think people get a little panicked about, you know, guys like that. No, not so much Kershaw, but guys in the next tier down. And you just want to scream at people. It's early.
Yeah.
The other, you know, there's some other bids. You know, one bid I kind of liked, and this is kind of a Vickery thing. Tyler Lyons went for two. Phil Hertz bid 11, and the only other bidder was one. Lyons is one of those guys I've always liked in an only format or a really deep mix. You know, it's just unfortunate if he was in others that Prospectus have pointed this out. If Lyons was like, you know, in a on a like second division organization, he'd probably be a starter. He'd probably be like a four or five. Like think of a team like the Twins. But because he's on the Cardinals, he's kind of the in case of emergency break glass guy. And right now they have the emergency, and he's just one of those people in an only who could earn, you know, $5-7. You know, nothing great, but just not a bad guy to have. And I think that was a good pickup by Hertz.
Yeah, although with that said, I think Lyons is going to get about two starts before someone comes back. They have the Cardinals have Marco Gonzalez and Jaime Garcia both making rehab starts at AAA this weekend. I don't think Lyons, even if he pitches okay, stays in the rotation over either of them.
But he'll be back at some point, is what I think.
Sure, because they'll have another injury, and he'll be back for another two, three starts, and then he'll disappear again.
Brett, when you talk about Garcia, it makes me so sad.
I know, it makes me sad too.
I hear the hope in your voice, and I just feel like, you know, no.
I just want to see him pitch. That's all.
This podcast has taken a turn, man. This is like really, this is almost like the Jose Fernandez podcast from last year. It's not that sad, but I just feel like it's taken a turn. Are we going to start talking about Edwin? Actually done really well.
He's invested to the bullpen a little bit.
He's done all right.
There was a part of me that was looking at Edwin like as kind of a backup to Martin, like, you know, for zero or one, you know, he might be that last reliever. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I can do that.
Yeah, because all it takes is one.
I know. Just takes – well, and he's also the guy who, like, if the Cubs are down, like – you know, 6-2, and you know, Madden's like, yeah, I just need to save the bullpen. You could just see him like going out there for two or three innings and getting torched, and Madden being like, well, that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah, see him racking up a Vin Mazzaro.
Yep. So, anyone else in the NL only tout that we want to discuss? It was a pretty light week.
Do you think there's upside with Justin Bour? The Marlins.
I do.
He's been playing over Mike Morse. It's been weird.
I don't think that's going to last. Although, you know, how old is Morse? Because I always think
33.
Yeah, I'm going to reveal my, you know, as usual, as I often do on the podcast, I'm going to reveal my age. This is what I call, you know, and you'll remember this now as a Cub fan, or maybe you're not old enough, Steve Buschel syndrome, where you have a guy like, he's performing at a level, you know, it's kind of a deep mixed low level or an NL only level. He's performing, and suddenly falls off a cliff. And that's what happened to Steve Buschel. Like every year he was just kind of fine, and then all of a sudden he just couldn't do it. And he wasn't that old. And that's the thing with Morse. Morse strikes me as one of those players where that could happen. I'm not saying it will, but there could just come a time for someone like Morse where he just can't do it. I don't think that's going to be the case, but that's where I think Bohr could kind of slide in and perhaps, you know, just suddenly become a guy.
Yeah, well, if it's going to happen, this is when it's going to happen. This is when it gets me really – I've had this talk with a couple of people before. Tall hitters that are entering their 32, 33 range
Richie Sexton.
Scare the crap out of me. Right now I'm on Richie Sexton's baseball reference page. Of course I'm on Richie Sexton's
baseball reference page. I had Richie Sexton like in my AL only the year that happened, and I spent a month arguing with people that he was going – I'm getting mad about this in retrospect. I spent a month like arguing with people. No, he's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. And then like with a week left, and I know we don't curse on Flags Fly Forever as much as we do – you guys do on Tino, but it was like, fuck, I'm pretty much wrong here.
Yeah, it's having with Richie Sexton. He just eventually guys that are that tall just can't. Yeah. They just can't make enough contact anymore.
It's that. I think it has something to do with the torque. Like
you lose enough speed and athleticism. You're not going to be able to get to the ball like you used to. You're just not.
Yeah, and you know, he's an example, another example of someone who I've been off for a, you know, I mean, a lot of people have been off, but Corey Hart, same thing. I mean, Corey Hart missed a year, but Corey Hart's 6'6", and he's 33, and he's pretty much just done. There's very rarely do you come back from being 6'5" or taller at like that 32, 33 range. If you're that tall and you're that old and you're done, you're done.
Yeah, and it is the athleticism thing, because Dexter Fowler's tall, and you know that's not going to happen to him. He's too athletic.
He's got a very different. The Dexter Fowler body is a lot different than the Richie Sexton body.
Oh my god! Yeah, but different swing too. Very different swing. Yeah, it's that 6'5", 6'6" power hitter that you really gotta look out for.
Yeah. But yeah, so. Justin
Thanks for
Bohr.
Getting me mad about Richie Sexton. That was terrific.
Yeah. So yeah, I am all for speculating on Justin Bohr, because there is a real chance that Mike Morris is just done.
Yeah. We were talking about guests coming on into the show and getting mad about old things. I could always have my old blogging partner John Toslowski come on and talk about an old White Sox pitcher, Aaron Wasserman, and you know, get him mad about a fantasy baseball race he lost because of the only win that Aaron Wasserman ever got. But that's a side piece.
Yeah. So the American League.
there was one bid over a dollar in the American League. This was Kyle Blanks.
Yep, I'm looking at it.
That's the second week in a row, too, that happened.
This is one of the worst bid lists I've seen in my life.
And I last week I had the energy to write a long analogy about Thor and whatnot in the Fab piece. This week I had no jokes. I saved it all for the lineup card, which people liked or didn't like. I couldn't really tell. But, I think Blanks... That's not a bad bid. I think he could be solid. Mitch Moreland will be out for a while. It's one of those bids in an AL only where it's like, well, what do you have to lose? If he stinks, you know, so what? You didn't spend all your budget on him.
Yeah. The two things I want to comment on real quickly here is one, the Jonathan Villar bid. Jason Collette bid $46 for him.
Oh yeah, oh my
which
God.
I love seeing bids like this. These are the you know, for lack of a better word, these are the fuck you Vickery bids, where you know he pretty much comes out and says, yeah, I don't care what anyone else bids for him. I'm getting him. I just don't really care all that much what the price is. So you know, usually with these guys, usually they're not high demand players.
The hope is the next time if somebody bids like five or six, you're like, okay, I got him for seven, and I'm basically expressing my preference.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I like the aggressiveness. I like Villar as an AL only pickup for a buck. I think it's a really strong move. But even for more, it would be fine. I think that's the point of why he made an aggressive move like that. The guy who I was surprised it didn't get picked up, and maybe this was a timing thing because I don't remember when the news came out, but Joey Butler is going to go for a little bit of cash next week, and I'm curious to see who he goes to, because he could have been had for zero this week.
Yeah, well, you know, I always bring this story up, but it was like the week I got a couple years ago when I got Mojica, when he was named the Cardinals closer like 2 hours before the deadline, and I bid 46, and the next highest bid was three, so I got him for four. And that was totally a timing thing. If Matheny had made that statement like 12 hours before, Mojica probably goes for 50, just because it's the nature of those late moves, you know, right before the deadline. I you know, it's a funny about experts, like even the ones who only, you know, play, you know, fantasy and have no other jobs, you know, like we talk about them all the time, like Tristan Cockerell, a friend of the show, you know, I know him. My wife actually went to college with him a couple of years after. You know, but she knows his wife. I mean, you know, he's a family. I mean, he goes to bed, you know, he puts his kids to bed and he doesn't look at this stuff. You know, Eric Carrible, who does a labor site, he always talks about the fact that it's his job and he kind of feels like, well, I love my job. I love that I get to do fantasy baseball, but my weekends are mine. So you kind of have that culture even with experts where Sunday night comes, it's 11 o'clock, and they're not sitting there like staring at the wire like, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
On the other hand, I'm sure there are some experts out there like that, and I won't mention any names.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I'm looking at when the news broke on Butler. It was Sunday at 1 p.m. when it got reported that Butler was going to play a lot, and then he hit fifth on Sunday for the Rays. So yeah, I'm still surprised he was not picked up. But he's a really interesting AL only flyer for me. I mean, that is that's a team that is going to have some at bats for him. So. I don't know.
Yeah, my home league, my home AL only. He's a guy I wish I had the space for. I just have a team that's kind of like stacked up the bottom, so I don't. But yeah, he's a guy I'm just kind of almost trying to find room for because in that format, I emphatically agree. He's somebody I would probably put some kind of double digit bet on.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to discuss it next week then.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So that's it for fab betting. So let's jump right into the topic of the day. And this is the extension of our topic from 2 weeks ago. I know we took a break from this last week, but
to lament Adam Wainwright.
Yeah, yeah, to lament Adam Wainwright. Which, and talk about
we made it through. We did okay.
We did. So we are going to talk about pitchers and hitters who are underperforming so far this year, and talk about how concerned we are. We're gonna shorten the list a little bit, and just so that we don't go too long. But we got five guys on each side of the coin. So we're gonna start with the hitter. So I'm going to throw it to Mike to talk about our first guy. So Andrew McCutchen, what's the deal?
Well, you know, he's somebody who I was saved from in pretty much every league I'm in. Well, in the draft leagues, all of our picks were late. Brett, we had the 15th pick in labor, which I think in retrospect was kind of a blessing. He's been hurt. You know, he's kind of had anything from general soreness to leg issues. And, you know, I don't know how much of the Pirates you guys have watched, but when I watch the Pirates, and I've probably watched them like four or five times, you can see that he's not quite right. Like, he's a player I think that a DL stint, you know, would be serve him and serve the team well. But it just seems like a situation where he wants to go out there. He's like, look, I know I'm not 100%. I think he said it at one point. I think he said, like, I'm 85, 90%, but I feel like I can play at that level. And I'm sure that's true. You know, he's obviously better than replacement level, you know, in 85 to 90% Andrew McCutchen. But if he's hurt, it just puts you in such a tough position. Like, I guess the question I would ask you guys is, if you're in, you know, forget deep mix. If you're in, like, a 12-team mix, you know, what's the value on McCutchen right now? Like, is he an outfield two? Is he an outfield three? Like, where do you slot him in?
I think you have to slot him in as an outfield two until, well, you have to. I mean, with his track record, even if the knee continues to be an issue, I think that he's talented enough to play to either play around it, and if he can't play around it, I think he will eventually go on the DL, and maybe that'll be a positive for him in the long run. I mean, if he you know, takes, like, you know, 3 to 4 weeks off, but comes back as Andrew McCutchen, that's a big deal. If he kind of, I mean, worst case scenario is if he kind of lingers as this, you know, 80 to 85% of Andrew McCutchen, and it clogs up a roster spot with an okay guy where you thought you were getting a star. So it's certainly unfortunate, but, you know, giving away McCutchen at this point is a recipe for regret. I think you kind of the market for him is not going to be strong, and I think you're kind of stuck with him right now.
Mal, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I'm just sad. He makes me sad, and I blame it on him cutting off his dreadlocks, to be honest.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it does feel like that's the easy blame.
Well, there's a couple things looking at his line. I mean, the one thing is because he's hurt or banged up, he's not running, and that's not going to change. And that's something that even if the power comes, and even if some of the other stuff that comes with the McCutcheon goodness, shows up, he just won't run if he's hurt. And he's 25 games in and has no steals. He had 18 in 2014. He had 27 in 2013. If you're pegging him for 2022, that's a big drop. Now, the second thing, his BABIP is like way down. And I know some people would look at that and say, well, he's unlucky. He's going to like hit. But when you're playing hurt, sometimes that's a product of weak swings, poor contact, doing things you wouldn't do up there. So even if he's due some luck, he's not due the amount of luck that I think some people might think he's due.
Yeah, I'm certainly with you that I'm not writing this up as luck. This is not a luck thing. This is an unfortunate circumstance.
This makes me really sad because I said coming into the season, I know for some people it's Trout. Like Kutch is, he might be my favorite. Like non-Met, like I love Kutch, and this is just kind of sad to see.
Yeah, I mean, at what point do we start calling him Samson?
Man, the jokes are bad.
That was good. It was good, but it was bad. It was good.
Yes.
Bad.
All right. So, real quickly before we move on. If you have McCutcheon and the best offer you have for him is a non-top 50 player, are you taking that offer today, Mike?
No. I always talk about this. I think that, and I kind of said this, you're looking at 90% on the low end of value in a trade. So to me, that'd be no. I think if you got a top 25, top 30, I think you have to consider it. Anything below that, I say no.
No?
Nope. Don't do it. I mean,
Yep. I'm with you guys. All right, so let's move on to the next guy, who is Carlos Gonzalez. He's doing a little bit better than Andrew McCutcheon, but that is not a very high bar to cross. He's been borderline unusable in fantasy so far. He's hitting 200. He's got two homers, no steals. And the steals probably shouldn't be a huge shock because his steal numbers have gone down. And I think if people were expecting, more than about 10 to 15 steals from him, that was probably a little optimistic. But, it's 587 OPS is not exactly what people had in mind when they were betting on a cargo rebound. We were pretty high on cargo coming into the season. Mike, have you seen anything with him that makes you think that this is something that he can rebound strongly from, or is this something that has you concerned?
I'm right in the middle, and I took cargo in tout. And, it's kind of funny because G. McCaffrey, Wise Guy Baseball, jumped the bid. And his bid, if he had jumped it one higher, I would probably have been like, yeah, I'll pass. But I went the next one up and I got him for like 27, in and only, which, obviously is different than a mix. From watching Cargo, my feeling about him, he still looks like the hitter he used to look like, and he still looks pretty healthy. He looks like he's just missing. Like he looks like he's just kind of a little bit behind. So what I don't know is I don't know if it's a timing thing because he was hurt and, he's just, a couple good swings away or, a hot streak away from getting it back, or if he's diminished as a result of the injury. I still think it's the former. I still believe, and I still think you could be looking at a solid, outfield two, maybe bottom outfield two here. If you were looking for him to get all the way back to being a top outfielder, even putting the steals aside, I think that was a fool's errand. And I think he won't earn as much as we were expecting, but I still think he'd be close. And, the other thing, too, they had 9 games at home in April. The Rockies, and that's kind of the thing with a lot of the Rockies, and it's true for Troy Tulowitzki. It's true for a lot of the team, with the exception of, I think, Corey Dickerson and Charlie Blackman, and that a lot of those guys, you know, we know the deal with the splits. Like, they don't hit as well on the road as they do at home. I kind of want to see what Cargo is going to do, and, you know, what Tulo is going to do with an extended stretch at Coors.
Yeah, he really needs the extended stretch at Coors, and it's not coming in May either. I mean, Colorado has a pretty split month of May, but in the summer he's going to have like that 1 to 2 month stretch where they play about 60% of their games at home, and honestly, if I was trying to pry Cargo from their owner and their owner wasn't paying that much attention to the schedule, I would seek that out and kind of try to time it, because yeah. Cargo is one of those guys that really does it. He really does do the Coors effect is more real with him than I think with some of the other guys on Colorado.
I would agree, probably more than just me. But I mean, the thing about that, though, and we've talked about this with Tulowitzki, is unfortunately, because of the, you know, the nature of injuries, and I'm not a big believer in people being injury prone, but I think both with Cargo and Tulo, you have to budget, even conservatively, you have to budget 40 to 50 games of injury. And that's the problem with Cargo, which is if you have a road heavy schedule for the first 2 months, it's like, well, when's he going to be out? It's just hard to envision him playing 140, 145 games.
Yeah, well,
I hope I'm wrong, because like I said, I have a pretty big stake in him, you know, in an expert league that I very badly want to win, but that's just how I feel.
Yeah, that's fair. I still believe that Cargo can be sort of that, you know, almost peak Cargo at some point this year. You know, certainly not the guy who was a first round pick, but yeah,
let me ask you guys this: over under on Cargo, over under 25 home runs.
Under.
Oh no.
Yeah, 20.
Right about. I don't feel good saying over, and I don't want to say under.
I'm gonna say over.
I think I'll go over by like a couple. So, I mean, that's a proposition. I think 20, 21, 22 home runs in this era, in this context, you know, if you're not Nelson Cruz, I think that's something you take.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the pull with Cargo, right, is the batting average.
Right.
I mean, his batting average, just reading off his batting averages since he became, you know, Cargo, at, you know, 336, 295, 303, 302, and then last year was – you just throw last year out
well,
the window.
Well, I was going to say the pull with Cargo is that he was always like a five-category guy. He was never – except for 2010, he was never a super stud, but he was a guy that was kind of just all the way around like solid. And yeah, last year he stunk, and you know, it's just sort of where do you think he's going to land now?
Yeah. Yeah. So – should we move on to the next guy?
I think we should.
I'm sad about this guy.
Yeah. Well, this whole conversation is going to be sad. So maybe we should just get through this a little bit faster, just because I don't want to be sad for this long.
Yeah, we need to see Angie's like sad baseball stats, a little baseball with a frown on it.
Yeah. So let's talk about David Ortiz. Mal, we'll start with you this time. What, on a scale of 1 to 10... one being not concerned at all, and 10 being I'm ready to jump out the window. How concerned are you about Ortiz's start to this season?
I don't think you can get to one, just depending on just like looking at what Ortiz has done over the course of the season. He hasn't been awful. He just hasn't been superhuman. So, you know, I think that going from, you know, 2012 and kind of moving forward from there, we've seen a gradual decline of some skills. We've seen that the power was starting to evaporate a little bit. The average was gone last year, and I think he's just getting older. So, I mean, you know, for me, like, I'm probably at about a 7. Like, if he put up a 250, 336, 434 line, 435 line for the rest of the season, I think that'd be okay. Like, if you drafted him to be the super stud who's going to hit you 40 home runs this year, I mean, then you're going to be disappointed. But I think that just for me personally, like it's, I mean, he's 39. Like everyone retires, man.
He's kind of almost the Jeter of the Derek Jeter of his position. You know, some of the DH doesn't play the field, so he's had that, you know, kind of credit. But it is kind of funny that we're talking about a guy who, you know, has 4 home runs in 25 games and, you know, whose ISO is, you know, 185 compared to 255 last year, as somebody who's in a decline. I think the real question with Poppy is this the new normal? And, you know, if this is the new normal, we're talking about 20 home runs. Or is he going to bounce back to some semblance of last year? And I think it's a thing with Poppy, and it's similar to Jeter, which is I'm guessing because he's, like Mao said, he's 39, that he's going to slip. But I feel the same way I did about Derek, which is I if Ortiz winds up with 27 home runs, I'm not going to be surprised in the least.
No, I wouldn't be either. And I think, you know, as he gets closer to the end, I mean, it certainly shouldn't be surprising to see a strikeout rate tick up a little bit. And we don't know that hasn't quite stabilized yet, but it's trending in that direction. And, you know, the BABIP is trending down, and that's something you also expect, you know, as he gets closer to the end of whatever his aging curve is, because his aging curve is not normal. But, you know, I would not be surprised at all to see Ortiz finish, you know, with a 260 to 270 average this year with 25 homers. And I think that's still pretty reasonable. If you were hoping for more than that, then maybe it's slightly disappointing, but people shouldn't have been hoping for a ton more than that. I mean, I think at the beginning of the season, people could have been expecting 30 home runs. I think 30 home runs is less likely at this point, but, you know, certainly not out of the realm of possibility. It's just unlikely.
Yep.
Yep.
Old man fails to hit 30. I don't think that's. I think that's.
Yeah, okay. I'm gonna guess 23 to 25 for him.
Yeah, I would trend that way. I would actually probably put it at 25, like 25 to 30. But I don't think he goes over 30.
All right. So then how do we feel about the next guy rebounding? Next guy is Shin Soo Shu. He had an extremely bad start to the year, although he's starting to pick it up recently. He hit a home run tonight, although he also struck out in his other 3 at bats. I think he's got a 6 or 7 game hitting streak at this point. Looks like a 6 game hitting streak. Which is something, considering he went 0 for about 30 before that. His numbers are up to being just terrible, as opposed to being supremely awful. His line is 156, 267, 351. So that's good for about a 610 OPS, 620 OPS. Do you think Shin Soo Shu finishes as a top 50 outfielder, Mike?
No. Well, we're talking mixed, right?
Yeah.
No. Well, for one thing, we talked about Cargo. I don't see the steals coming. I just watched Chu, and I know he's looked a little bit better. He just doesn't. He looks like one of those players who's just kind of really kind of like fade. And fade fast, and even if he, you know, is a productive outfielder, I don't think you're going to get what you got of him in Cincinnati. I just don't have the faith.
Yeah, I don't feel. He's not doing anything. He hasn't been doing anything since he got to Texas, and you know it's a 1 year. But even his secondary skills have eroded, and it looks like it's going to be a bad end.
Yeah, that looks like a really bad contract at this point, huh?
Yeah, that's a lot of money and not going to get a lot of value out of it. 7-130, he signed for 2020.
You know, some have talked about it as like one of the worst contracts, and there's a lot of hyperbole, you know, where that's concerned. But yeah, it's going to be bad.
Yeah, it is. But this is also what people were saying about the Jason Worth contract in the second year, right?
Yeah, was Worth that bad in years 1 and 2?
He
was not good.
Well, he was, but the thing about Worth compared to Chu is that Worth was hurt, but when he was on the field, he was kind of average, above average. The thing about Chu is that he was hurt, but when he's been on the field, he just hasn't been good. And I think, you know, no one expected Worth after all those injuries to kind of bounce back to the Phillies level, which he did. I always say this, when a player is on the field and not performing, you know, and this was kind of true of Cargo, that's sort of where you have some of those, you know, some of those concerns, some of those alarm signs. You know, Worth was kind of down, but he wasn't performing so badly that you kind of thought, oh man, this is going to be bad. Chu was and has been at that level.
Yeah, it's been ugly for Chu in Texas, and it probably will continue to be so. So the last hitter we're going to talk about is Chase Utley. So Mike, I'll let you take this one since I think you've seen him more than we have. Are the reports of him just hitting balls to people over and over and over and over again overstated, or is it really a reasonable explanation here?
It's most of it. I hope that's it, because, you know, Chase Utley is just that player here in Philadelphia who is probably one of the most beloved, like, Phillies. I'll leave other sports out of it in the team's history. You know, just because I'm old enough to remember Mike Schmidt actually getting booed, which, if you know, you can't fathom that, it's something that happened. I think that, you know, we kind of saw this with Utley last year. You know, Utley last year, we had him in labor, get off to a fast start, and then from that point forward, which I think was like the middle of May, he was just kind of pedestrian. And I think this is the thing about Utley to remember, which is, he's not going to be, forget about the player he was in his peak, which is the non-Joe Morgan second base peak. He kind of is just going to be a pedestrian player. So when, you know, I'm talking about like a low 700 OPS, so he's going to bounce back. I just think the bounce back is not going to be what anyone's expecting. On the other hand, though, he's not finished. You know, this start isn't an indication to me. I know his age, I know his limitations. He's not finished. The thing I'd watch with him, oddly enough, even though it doesn't matter in fantasy, is his defense. You know, he kind of had the situation with his knees, where at one point people wondered if he'd play. From what I've seen, his defense is fine. Like, he looks okay in the field. My concern would be as if he had a knee issue and he clearly was, like, limping around or being very ginger, given that past history. I haven't seen that. So I think there's some bounce back here. But you're looking at a deep mix player. You're not looking at somebody who in a standard mixed league is going to help you all that much.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think he's more or less an average guy when things are going well, and you know it's going to be. I think we're looking at pretty close to single digits in home runs and steals at this point.
Yeah. The other point worth making, I think you, Brett, you and I talked about this like yesterday offline, middle infield outside of a handful of guys has been really bad thus far this year.
It's awful.
Yeah. It's a graveyard on top of a graveyard.
That is apt.
Which describes The Walking Dead. But yeah, that's really what it's been. Like you have like Altuve, you have a couple other guys a second and short, but just nobody's performed. So, you know, I think for where Utley has to bounce back to probably isn't as high as you might expect positionally.
No. No, it's really not. And he can get there to the point where he's perfectly usable in most leagues, but he's not going to be someone who you're going to be thrilled to own in mixed leagues.
I have to admit, I try to avoid bias, but Utley is just one of those players. Like I moved down to Philadelphia like right before their run. I am just so, and I went to a lot of games like when the Phillies were, you know, really good and winning. I love him. Like I'm very biased when it comes to him, and I admit that bias. So maybe I'm just not seeing what others see. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah. I guess we'll find out, right?
Yeah, I just hope I'm wrong.
I hope you are too. But let's move on to the couple pitchers that we're going to tackle. Let's combine these first two guys together, just because they were both sort of in that same tier of, you know, guys who you could get away with as having as being your best pitcher, but you know, guys who would probably not qualify as a fantasy ace on most mixed league teams. That's John Lester and Jordan Zimmermann. Both have obviously had very tough starts to the season. Let's just start by comparing them. Mike, if you could choose one right now for the rest of the season, who would you take, Lester or Zimmermann?
I'd probably take Zimmermann. It's really close, and I think they're comparable pitchers. And I think some of this is that Lester, he had that second half for the ages with the A's. I didn't think he was that good. You know, it was a park that certainly helped him. It was a division that helped him. It was a defense that helped him. And Zimmerman's a guy who, you know, he finished the year with a no-hitter, that great catch at the end. They're both pitchers to me, you know, and when we had our tier rankings, they were kind of at the bottom of that top tier, which speaks to the fact that they could be on the other end of it. You know, they could be at the top of that four-star tier that we had. So you're not talking about a pitcher who's like an elite pitcher like a Clayton Kershaw or Felix Hernandez, where you're so shocked that they're doing this. Like, I'm more surprised. They've had stretches like this before. I think Lester in particular has had stretches like this before, which is why I lean Zimmermann. I think Zimmermann is more likely to kind of emerge from this and just be that pitcher who's right beneath the cusp of being elite. Whereas I could see Lester continue to struggle a little bit more, you know, particularly because that team behind him is young. And even if they're good on paper defensively, a young team can still make mistakes.
Yeah, I think I think you're right about it, this being less surprising for Lester. I think, honestly, I think that undersells how I think how reliable Jordan Zimmermann has been.
Right.
I mean, he's had the uptick in strikeouts, and you know, it's held for a little while, and maybe that looks like it's falling off a little bit. But Zimmermann's been extremely strong in the ratio department since he arrived, and his struggles have been more surprising to me than Lester's, and I'm with you that I'd rather have Zimmermann the rest of the way, but how much do you think the Nationals defense has to do with what Zimmermann with Zimmermann's struggles, because the Nationals pitching as a whole has struggled a bit, and you know, with their injuries, they were, you know, they're playing Dan Ugly at second base. Ian Desmond's not a particularly good shortstop. They're playing Escobar out of position at third base. They have Denard Spann was out, and even though Michael Taylor is a pretty decent defensive replacement, still not as good as Denard Spann. How concerning is the Washington defense long term, though?
It's concerning. You know, you hit upon most of the points. I think that, you know, Desmond's kind of had the yips. He should be better than this. So he's certainly not, you know, an above average player. You know, Ugla concerns me out there when they have Danny Espinosa out there. It's a concern. Assuming Spann's healthy, he should be okay. Although, as we've kind of seen with this core muscle injury, I think he's going to miss a little bit of time here and there all year. Yeah, it's probably something that's going to push those ERAs up. I'd say a quarter point, you know, maybe 0.3. Maybe that's high, but, you know, let's say a quarter point. And that's something that I don't think we factored in coming into the season that matters. This is a team that really misses Anthony Rendon on both sides.
Yeah.
He was an MVP caliber player last year, and you have to kind of wonder this year, given all the setbacks he's had, you know, when he's coming back and, you know, if he's coming back.
Yeah.
I know that made you sad.
Yeah, it does. We should cut off the sadness at some point. So let's just pick one more guy to talk about. I don't want to talk about Strasburg. He's also a victim of that defense, and now he's got the shoulder thing. That's just weird. Should we just talk about who do you want to talk about? You want to talk about Phil Hughes? You want to talk about the Red Sox rotation? We'll pick one and then we'll move on.
Phil Hughes, I guess, because I have the page open and it's one player and not five.
Let's talk about Phil Hughes. I feel like we're going to be able to talk about the Red Sox rotation for quite some time here.
Yeah,
maybe that's a different topic altogether. But all right, so Mike, what do you think about Hughes?
I think that he's probably somebody who will be better, but last year was the fluke. You know, last year was the one year where, despite the fact that he pounds his own and doesn't really have a ton of movement, he didn't give up a lot of home runs. And this year he's back to giving up the home runs. He's not going to give up close to 2 home runs per nine, but he probably will give up like 1.3 per nine. And, you know, last year was like 0.7. So even if the strikeouts come back a little bit, which they should, I don't think that he was that pitcher who put up like, you know, a FIP like well under 3. He's kind of more of a 3 or 4. He's not somebody, I should say, in fantasy. He's just not somebody who's going to perform at that ace level, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm pretty down on Hughes. I was pretty down on Hughes in the preseason. I don't like this model for success. It's too many strikes. It's too many strikes. When major league hitters know that strikes are coming, they will load up, and it's not, you know, Hughes has always had home run issues. The more he is in the zone, the more hard contact he's going to give up, and I don't see this working out any other way than him being more or less replacement level in shallower mixed leagues and just a pretty poor investment in deeper mixed leagues. Matt, what were you going to say?
No, yeah, I was just going to. You riffed on the point perfectly. It was, you know, when you're pumping the strike zone like that, two things are going to happen. You're not going to walk a lot of people, and you're going to give up a lot of hits. So, you know, some deception is necessary if you're going to be that type of guy. And he doesn't have the type of stuff that necessarily inspires a lot of confidence that you're going to be able to do that and be good for a long period of time.
No. Yeah. All right, so I think this is good. I think we're sufficiently bummed. We're going to come back. Next week, I promise, we're not going to talk about players that are sucking.
I'm sure we'll have some more injuries and labor to talk about as the year goes on, and that was a horrible jinx, and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, you just destroyed the whole thing right there, Mike. Just destroyed the whole thing.
Right. You know, every time I text Brett about how well a player's doing, he pretty much starts like not to perform, so yeah.
Pretty much. yeah, so let's wrap this up before our season is ruined. You can read all of us at baseballperspectus.com. You should read all of us at baseballperspectus.com. Sign up for premium membership, read all of our stuff, read all the prospect team stuff, read all of our national writer stuff. It's really good. Sign up for a super premium membership and get access to the Bat Signal, which is our fantasy answering service. You send us questions, we send you answers, usually within about 12 hours. We have started up our DraftKings game, which we did the second one tonight, the Baseball Prospectus Beat the Experts game. Follow us on Twitter, which you were doing anyway, but follow us on Twitter for details on that. It's a lot of fun, and we are all going to be participating in it. that is it. Email us, flagsflyforever@baseballperspectus.com. We will see you next week for a much less depressing episode. Have a good week, and have fun to everyone who is going to the BP event in Milwaukee. It sounds like an awesome time. If you live in Milwaukee and are not going, I believe there are still a few tickets left, so buy those now.
Yep, you got to do it now.
Yep.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye.